Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of Woman is the Use. We will be sitting down with artist, poet, curator, entrepreneur and author Tamika Petrie Escott L. of Black Cotton to discuss this beautifully affirming book that pays homage to the varying kinky, curly textures of Black women's hair and the women who embrace their natural beauty. And it's, I think it's particularly important during this time when there is such a great backlash against stating that Black girls rock, or Black girls are beautiful. Black carding is proving that with these captivating images and showing exactly various ways that we do rock. And welcome, Tamika.
Greetings.
Thank you for joining us, sis, on Womanist Views.
Thanks for having me.
So we're just going to go ahead and throw you on in there. So we're going to get started with the questions that I've had come in for you and things I thought that we should discuss while we have time with you. So let's begin by talking about how Black Cotton itself came about.
Okay. So it's interesting. My husband and I were having a conversation a while ago. I used to rock a thick afro for years. And as an artist, one of the things that I always wanted to do was do a photography or an art book that would be more of like a coffee table book. Of myself with the afro, but with different styles of makeup and different types of fashions and different types of scenery and settings, et cetera. And so we were talking about that, and I was planning to lock my hair. So in speaking about my vision, and then, of course, he has a vision, we thought, well, hey, why don't we just do that? But instead of it being me, how about we just do all as many women as we can, Black women as we can. And in that conversation, we were talking about, since it was going to be about afros, how the similarities in the actual afro hairstyle really does feel and look like cotton. And my hair is black, so we figure, hey, that's the name of the book, Black Cotton. So that's how the book was given birth to, or the idea of it.
Well, lovely. And, of course, I do have a copy of the book. And, again, the images are amazing. We have been sharing them on the Women's Feeds website for those who have not had a chance to take a look at them. Once again, go ahead and get your iPhone with those. And what I did notice is the variations of styles and textures. So the amount of hair and texture of Black women's hair has always been somewhat of a problematic issue within the Black community and outside of it. People always talk about how their hair is handled in workplace settings. So I will ask you, what are your views on texturism in the Black community? And were you interested in addressing them in this project? Was the variety that you showcased done on purpose?
So that's an interesting question, and here's why. Because generally what we really wanted to focus on was afro hair. So when we did the casting for the models, we asked that they came, if they wore weaves, to take the weaves out. We also asked if, you know, they had natural hair or whatever, if they just washed it the night before, did nothing to it, don't put any oils or anything in it. So coincidentally, 33 models that we shot, there was some that still had their weave in the hair, right? There were some, I guess, was not sure what to do with their hair, so they had more oil than they needed to have in the hair. Some came with lots of gel on the hair, slick back. All that to say, I think this project was truly in divine order, meaning even though it was our intent to focus on the afro textured hair, we worked with what we got, and what really gave, what transpired out of the photo shoot, out of this, was the Black woman has very diverse ways and styles of wearing our hair, whether it's in the workforce, whether it's going out at night, whether it's at home or what have you. And so really we wanted to showcase all of that, because all of it is truly divine and beautiful, what have you. Regardless of the texture, the fact that we have the freedom to be creative in how we wear our hair We wanted to showcase that and the beauty of that and the diversity in our multifaceted fashion sense and creative sense, if you will. So it's kind of like almost, it wasn't written in the project plan, but let's just say that it was truly divine order and what was supposed to be was. And so the fact that we were able to show the various different hairstyles was truly amazing. I attribute that to also the hairstylist of the book, James Williams from Samaj Salon in Tennessee, really did his thing in the hairstyles for Black Cotton. So hopefully that answered your question.
Yes, yes. And with 33 models, that alone is an amazing feat to get through. Can you explain your selection process for the models featured? How did you approach representing, again, our full spectrum of Black beauty and, you know, let those know what they needed to do to become a Black Cotton model?
Yeah, so what we did was we put the casting call out to several modeling casting sites. And as they got back with us, and what we didn't turn away anyone that was of African descent. So if you are a mixed, very light skin or what have you, because the thing about being an African is that there are the variations not only in our hair texture but in our skin color as well. And we wanted all women of all different colors of hues to feel, oh, to see an image of them and like, oh, my gosh, look, my skin is beautiful and it's depicted in this book. So we had 33 models that responded and it was 33 models that we shot. And to be honest, we were expecting that not all of them would show up, but they did. And they showed up at the appropriate call time and more importantly, again, at how amazing this project was and how divine it was. We have models that asked to come back. So it was a 5-day photo shoot. We have models that took days off of work just to come back. And it's like, well, if you want to use me for something else, I'll come back, you know. So I think that speaks volumes, too, and just how powerful this, you know, the creation of this book was and the presence in the publication of it now.
Interesting. Thank you. So let's backtrack a little bit because we talked about how the project came about. And you described again how the name Black Cotton came about when looking at the type and texture and look and feel of black hair. But has that name sparked any inquiries or any type of negative feedback? A lot of times black people are kind of, you know, it's kind of like I don't eat a banana in public because I'm black and I don't want to be called a certain name based on a stereotypical image of black people. So has that happened when you were using the word cotton in the book title?
Oh, yeah. It sure did. And we recently did an event where it came up a second or third time, too. And I will say that we weren't expecting that, but it's okay. And the reason why I feel it's okay, and, you know, the comments or the questions about why Black Cotton, like, ooh, why would I want to buy a book named Black Cotton and, you know, just thinking about our ancestors. But here's the thing to that, and this is my response to it. First, our ancestry goes back thousands of years prior to slavery. So our ancestry does not stop at that. And second, yes, we have ancestors that were slaves. They picked cotton, you know. However, they still paved the way. You know what I'm saying? So because and the thing is if we take offense to the word black cotton, but we wear cotton clothes every day, so, or cotton underwear every day. So my response to that is, you know, it's almost like paying homage to our ancestors. I think it's about time that we take power back from something that has created like a negative memory, if you will. And so that's my response to it. And, I mean, I understand the sensitivity of cotton considering our ancestry, but at the same time, I think we need to realize that our ancestry goes back much thousands of years prior to that, and also understanding what our ancestors went through during that time. If we're going to reject the word cotton or the use of black cotton, then reject all of it, you know what I'm saying, or embrace it and make good out, you know, keep on going because we're walking in their footsteps. We are rising in our ancestors' places. You know, so that's my response to that. But we definitely did get some backlash.
Well, thanks for the response. And she said, if you're gonna not, you know, if you're not gonna embrace cotton, put on some polyester underwear, because if you're gonna reject the word cotton, you gotta reject cotton itself, right?
Right.
So, what has been the overall feedback that the book has received? Let's get into the positive area of things, because it's once again, check out the book, people. We will in a moment. Go to the website, you'll see images there. So can you share with some of the overall feedback that the book has received?
Sure. We definitely get a lot of positive feedback, and it's, you know, much gratitude towards that. But so one of the things that I really appreciate about it, one, is when we're doing festivals or we're, you know, out, we have a table or set up as a vendor, what I really, really love is, even people that ask why the word black cotton, they start opening the book, and nobody ever walks away without looking at everything. They're stuck. You know what I'm saying? They become stuck. And it's like, oh, my goodness, my mom has to have this. My niece needs to have this. Oh, this person needs to have this. I want to get this for this person. I want to get this for that person. And so the feedback really has been positive. But I would say that one of the most rewarding pieces of feedback that we receive is when people who have purchased the book tell us the stories of how they just have the book sitting down on the coffee table or a side table, and their little daughter picks up the book and starts looking at it, and how excited their daughter or their niece gets at the images in the book, and the responses that they hear their daughter speak, like, oh, my gosh, you know, we are really so pretty, and she's pretty, I'm pretty, because if she's pretty, I'm pretty too, and oh my goodness, and if she could wear that, I could wear that too. So, you know, to hear that, it really gives me chills, and there's one story in particular where this one lady was speaking about how her great-granddaughter, who is mixed, she had the coffee table in her book, and she opened it, and she was excited about it. So the grandmother went to the kitchen, came back out. When she came back out, her great-granddaughter was sitting at the table with a paper and a pencil and was drawing the images on the book.
Oh, wow.
Of how she saw them. And to me, those are the things that that type of feedback is really like, okay, yeah, this is why we did that. This is why it's important to act upon visions that you've been called to do for these reasons. So a lot of positive feedback.
Wow, wonderful. So we're here talking about the book, but I realize we missed a step. Could you share with our listeners where they can actually purchase a copy of the book for themselves?
Oh, most certainly. Okay. So one, we have it on our website, and that's www.blackcottonbook.com. And you can purchase the book there. And there's also books if you're in the L.A. area at Zara Books on La Brea. And if you're in Nashville, Tennessee, there's also books for purchase at Samaj Studio. But if you're not in any of those areas, you could definitely purchase it from our website at blackcottonbook.com.
Thank you. So now you and your husband self-published this book, and to me this speaks of that need for us to get our stories out and our images out there without waiting for corporate approval to do so. Can you just briefly share what has been your biggest lessons learned from this self-publishing experience?
Sure. one of the biggest lessons that we learned was the end result. So after your book is published, there's maybe two or three that I'll touch upon, but one, after your book is published, it's out there, it's on the shelves, or you have to get it on the shelf. That's the biggest lesson, is the marketing, promotions, and publicity of now getting your book out there. The biggest lesson learned, so this is going to take me to the second lesson learned. We put a lot of time and money in the quality of the book. And then part of the quality of the book was the size of it. So it's an oversized book, so which means it's bigger than your average print, book print, I forget what they're called, like whatever they use to print the book. So there's extra cost there. So, like, if we could have saved where we would do things differently, we could have done a more standard size book, keeping the same quality of the pages, and probably reduced cost and use that money to put towards the marketing and publicity and promotion once the book was completed. Because the biggest lesson learned there was that's not our number one skill set. So it's also understanding what your skill set is and bringing the appropriate people on board to perform that part of the process. So those were our main biggest, you know, big lessons learned that I would share.
Thank you. So another thing that went to mind, I would like to get your feedback on this as well as an artist and someone who's created such a project, was how important is it that we capture our images throughout time as Black people, as Black women, and having control of that image?
Very. So I'm glad you asked that question, because the other thing I know we focused on here in Black Cotton, but Rasta, my husband, who's a photographer, and he came up with a lot of themes. The other thing that we hit up on was depicting our presence in cultures where we feel we really didn't have a presence. So the importance of showing and telling our stories with our faces is extremely important. So, for instance, I would say like the samurai warrior. So in the Black Cotton book, you'll see themes where the makeup artist Tammy Lee of Tammy Vision did like these kabuki themes on the face, and then we dressed them, myself and Ronnie Zepini dressed the models in like a samurai warrior type. We look at those things as being strictly Japanese culture, and we think that we as an African people really don't have any presence there, but that's not necessarily true. The first successful samurai warrior that led Japan to its first successful battle was of African descent. He was an African. And kabuki, even though it's primarily the only, Japan is the only country today that's still performing the kabuki theater, was actually something that originated in Kemet at a time of harvest, where they would dance and do a theater-type dance and celebrating the time of harvest. So showing our faces and telling our stories is extremely important, because we're left to rely upon what we're learning in schools, in government schools, or what people are telling us that are not, you know, necessarily have our DNA. So the more that we could spark the yearning to inquire more about ourselves and then go back and do that research for yourself, it's hugely important, and we need to do more of it, and we need to be the ones to tell it, and we need to be the ones to publish it so that we totally control the creative and the business and the marketing processes from beginning to end. That's how I feel about it.
Well, thank you again. And I love how you just talked about one of the themes, which is the kabuki theme, which is very interesting, because it seems like every theme or look in the book has this real purpose or meaning that you're trying to get across in that. Could you just go into the creative process that you guys relied on to create those looks, knowing that the history that you wanted to express within that look?
Sure. Okay, so here's the one thing, too, that in picking our, as part of the process, we picked a team of makeup artists, hairstylists, wardrobe, photographer, et cetera. And what we did is when Black Cotton does something, we totally leave it up to freedom to express yourself creatively. So the hairstylist went back, thought of what he wants to do. Makeup artist went back, you know, just considering some of the themes, and thought about what they wanted to do. But collectively, we all sat down and came up with all these various different things. And the reason for them is because we wanted to show the beauty and the power and the diversity of African descent women, not just in, you know, a modern day or what we see today in America, Europe, or wherever, but in some of the ancient aspects as well. And then you'll also, in the book, when you get the book, you'll see there, you know, we have strong representation where we focus on what's called the songstress. That's because when the woman speaks something, our words are very powerful. We have, and everyone, but more importantly, the woman, we have the power to heal, just as we have the power to take away with the words that we speak and the things that we do. You'll also see, like, pistol sweet. Now, what we wanted to do with pistol sweet was demonstrate the, you know, like the Pam Grier type, like, or the Matrix type, like, betray. Now, one of the things that we do get a lot of feedback or questions about, there's weaponry, props in the book. So, like, swords, it talks about the samurai war, et cetera, and some models where they're holding guns, et cetera. And some also feel like that's a negative representation. But the reality of it is we as women, we are protectors of our children, you know. And so even going as far back as whenever and even modern day, you know, if you've ever heard of stories where a woman's child was trapped under a car or something and all of a sudden the strength came out of her where she had to pick the car up, or, you know, there's the strength that come out of us. We are warriors. So there's a lot of that depicted in the book, too, in terms of things. So that's how we came up with it.
Interesting and great and very thorough process. And that, I think that's what's contributed to these wonderful images that have manifested from that process. What I would like to bring up to you is this notion of artivism, which pretty much involves using artistic mediums such as film, music, photography, murals, and so on as a means to raise awareness about social, environmental, and political issues and push for certain types of change. So when I look at your work, clearly I think that this is what an artivist looks like. You're doing art for a purpose, and you're, you know, making a social position with your work. So I would ask you, would you embrace that type of title? And do you believe that this book provides a radical way of affirming African descended beauty?
You know what? So I thought about that, and I myself am not, I'm not big on titles, but what I mean by that is I just do the work. So I consider myself a spiritual warrior. And when I'm called to do something, I just do it. So, and I do it for the sole purpose of it was put in me to do, which means that it's for somebody else. It's for other people, for whatever reasons that it's needed, that only I or whoever hands can touch it can produce in a way that it could be heard, seen, in a particular way that others need it to be. So if that can, if that considers me as an artivist or an activist, then so be it. But if I'm asked what my role is and all that, I am simply an artist. I'm a spiritual warrior, born of creativity to create, and that's just what I do. But also, as I say that in the book, if it's okay, I'd like to just do a quick quote in here that really represents that. And it's in the songstress part of the book, which is, I am a singer, a painter, a businesswoman, a producer, an actor, a poet, a writer, a designer, a motivator, a healer, a priestess, a planner, a strategist. And all of these things I do perfectly with little to no training, because it never entered my mind that I did not know how. And that's how I feel about it. You know, we were born of creativity to create. When it's put in you to do, if you just go for it, you know, the universe will provide and it will come to fruition in the way that it was meant and supposed to be.
Spoken like a true artist, and like we said in the introduction, Tamika is actually a true artist, not just with speaking in relation to the book, but she paints canvas art and is a poet. So what inspires you as an artist? Because it seems that your talents are bountiful, that you seem to be able to use different media to get out what you want to express. So what inspires you to do that?
I would say that a lot of my inspiration, especially when it comes to painting, is more on sound, so like music, and more so like the percussion. It's almost like, you know, hips moving. So the inspiration on that, it maybe that's with everything too, but the inspiration with that is just, it's just being loose, letting the sounds guide whatever needs to go on the canvas. And it's not pre-planned, so there's no pre-planning to it. Same with anything else. If there's a vision that comes, there's no pre-planning, even though I will, for instance, in the book or any other creative business ventures, I will put together a project plan for it. But the inspiration is more so music and also what I see, you know, and what I mean by what I see is when I walk out of my front door every day and look on the corner, when I'm driving wherever I'm going to, and what I'm seeing and witnessing, it provokes thought, it provokes concern. So those are inspiration for me in what I do.
So what advice would you give to someone who wanted to express herself through arts, launch a career in arts, or even be an entrepreneur in the field of arts? What should they look out for? And should an artist also be mindful of something like the business side of things, if you wanted to share any advice?
Yeah, so one of the advices that I have for the artist and whatever medium of art that is knowing and being honest with yourself. And what I mean by that is, are you an artist and an artist only, or are you also a business person? Because one of the big mistakes, too, is we as artists think that we can also be the managers or the business, do the business aspect of our art. And it's not true. So if you're honest with yourself and you know that, then it would be to seek out who can help you get your work off the ground, get it sold, get it shown, and stuff like that. And there are a lot of people out there that does that. And, you know, you could shoot me an email and I could give you, you know, help answer any questions on that, too. In terms of an entrepreneur, it really is just do it. I mean, research the steps needed to get it done and get it done legitimately from a, you know, getting a tax ID number, you know, legitimizing your business name. What does that mean? And do you need a logo? And all right, can you run it out of your home or getting it, you know, doing the steps. Research what you need to bring your idea to a reality. And what you'll find is once you start doing the work, we are a powerful and amazing people. Once you start doing the work and putting it on paper and, you know, start doing the research, you will be amazed at how magical you are when your idea actually becomes a reality and you are actually operating whatever business it was that you had the idea to start in the first place. So I would just say trust yourself. Do your magic, believe in who you are, and just go for it. And I would say don't listen to other people. Listen to other people, but trust yourself more. You know, listen, but trust yourself more, and let yourself guide you. So I hope that helps. I don't know if that was way to the left, but that's the advice I would give to both artists and or entrepreneurs.
Well, thank you again for that great amount of advice. And we thank you, Tamika Patrice Scott of Black Hiding, for joining us today here on Womanishes.
Yay! Thanks for having me. This was fun.